This is Dr. Mobeen Sayed with one more episode of Long Story Short with Dr. Bean from the FLCCC platform. So the discussion today is about a study that came out in February 2023, so a few months old. This study shows that in patients who are suffering with long COVID, if you give them vaccine, their immune system that is already aberrantly working, this is not their word, this is my word, that immune system becomes ramped up and then stays ramped up for a longer period of time compared to those who had the COVID infection and had recovered. It's a very interesting study. The takeaway is that long COVID patients, when they have vaccine, they can have a flare-up. Now, I do not know if everybody will, but in this study, they have statistically significantly proved that it does happen. Although I have always been aligned when I present a study to their author's message so that it's not that I have taken away a part of their message to fit it to my narrative. So I want to be clear that in this study, the conclusions that they made, I don't agree with them, but here are the conclusions that they made. One of the conclusions was, when a long COVID patient is given a vaccine, administered a COVID-19 vaccine, and their immune system ramps up and stays ramped up, that is possibly a protection from infection or reinfection. This is their message. However, what I disagree with is, we already have a patient who is suffering from immune activation, incorrect activation. Why do you want to flare up their immune system again? Secondly, if it is proven that a COVID-19 infected and recovered patient, when given the vaccine, does not get the flare-up, it gets a temporary ramping up of the immune system and then it goes back. And if a long COVID patient is given a vaccine, compared to the recovered infected patient, this patient has a flare-up that stays up, then we should be telling the patient to be careful because they're already suffering with the symptoms and this flare-up could increase the symptoms. So anyways, we'll stay true to the study itself to see what it is. However, you'll have to make your inference from this as well. So let's start our discussion. First, references. So starting with, this is covid19criticalcare.com or flccc.net. So over here, you have treatment protocols, medical evidence, resources, education, webinars, etc. If you go to covid19criticalcare.com/Dr. Bean, then you can see all the videos that I have done in the long story, and meaning long COVID and vaccine injury series. They are all over here. And can you see this? 76 videos, and this must be the next one. So this is one reference. This is the study, BMC infectious disease, serological response to vaccination in post-acute sequelae of COVID-19 or long COVID patients. And if you see the authors, Sandy Jong, Brittany Weber, Susan Chang, and Catherine N. Lee have contributed equally to this work. Look at their association, Department of Cardiology, Smith Heart Institute, Cedars-Sinai Medical Center, Los Angeles. Then I also saw some authors that were from Brigham and Women's Hospital. For example, here, Brian L. Claggett, Cardiovascular Division, Brigham and Women's Hospital, Boston, Massachusetts, USA. So mainstream research work. I also want to share with you this study. This is by Professor Dr. William Murphy, so if you see here, and by Dan L. Longo, a possible role for anti-idiotype antibodies in SARS-CoV-2 infection and vaccination. This we should keep in our mind when we are discussing today's talk, because this diagram is important to notice, where imagine that this is the virus. When the virus appears in our body, we will make antibodies against it. So over here, that is AB1. Then our body tries to clear these antibodies by making antibodies against these antibodies. And that is what you can see over here, that is AB2. However, please notice that if antibody 1 is targeted towards a spike protein, then a mirror antibody of this antibody will look like a spike protein and may be able to bind with ACE2. why do I bring this study up? This is called anti-ACE2 antibodies, and these antibodies can bind with ACE2 and either suppress them or inhibit them or activate them, causing immune system, especially inflammatory systems, imbalance. And so that imbalance is going to be observed in the study that we see today. Okay, so with these, let's start with our discussion. So again, this is a study. I want to read their result to us before we look at the diagrams that I have, just so that we see what they're saying. The results are individuals with PASC, post-acute sequelae of COVID-19 or long COVID, mounted consistently higher post-vaccination immunoglobulin GS antibodies. So immunoglobulin G, I'll explain what these antibodies are, against the spike protein, when compared to COVID-19 recovered patients. So if there is a COVID-19 patient who has recovered, and there is a long COVID patient who recovered but is now suffering because there is some immune abnormality going on, if you give them both a vaccine, then the recovered patient has an immune system that ramps up and then it goes down. But in the long COVID patient, immune system ramps up and stays ramped up for at least the duration of this study that they observed. And this is statistically significant. If you see here, median log immunoglobulin S level 3.98 versus 3.74. Remember, it's a log number and the p-value is 0.001. With similar results seen for ACE2. Remember, I just showed you the anti-ACE2 antibodies. So ACE2 binding levels. That means that the vaccine or the infection had generated antibodies that were against the spike protein. Then when you give the vaccine, those antibodies are produced again, then anti-antibodies are produced, which will then be binding with the ACE2 and causing immune disruption or inflammatory system disruption. And you may have this in your mind, and I have done this discussion before, why anti-antibody, or this is called more correctly anti-idiotypical antibody, why is that produced? Our body tries to clear foreign things or unnecessary proteins by making antibodies against them. When we receive spike protein in our body will make antibodies against the spike protein to clear the spike protein out. Then those antibodies that we are producing, that also need to be cleared out, the IgG. So then body makes another IgG against this IgG to clear this one out. And then they both go in a balance and finally they get cleared out. Now, anti-ACE2 antibodies were found as well. They called them ACE2 binding levels. So this was median 99.1 versus 98.2, p-value 0.044, again significant. The post-vaccination IgM, this is really important. IgM, and I'll explain it a little later, IgM is usually produced when there is an acute exposure to an antigen, when there is a first-time infection, for example, or the first-time receiving of the vaccine. But remember, we are talking about patients who have already gotten COVID and recovered, so they do not have an acute response, or patients who had recovered and then developed long COVID, they also are not looking at this antigen for the first time. So why is the IgM appearing in them? So vaccination IgM response in PASC long COVID was attenuated but persistently unchanged over time. It just continued. P equals 0.33 compared to in COVID recovery where the IgM response expectedly decreased over time. And I'll explain this, that why is there an IgM? IgM can actually get in the mix, but then it should go away very soon. And that is what happened in the patients who had infection and recovered. They developed IgM and then the IgM went away. But those who had long COVID, their IgM went up and stayed up. That is also an abnormal behavior. Findings remained consistent when accounting for demographic and clinical variables, including indices of index infection severity and comorbidity burden. So they stratified them and they did the variable analysis and they found the findings to stay consistent. So what is their conclusion? They said, we found evidence of aberrant immune response. So there are three things. ACE2 binding continues. IgM gets produced in long COVID after they get the vaccination and stays high, and then the IgG you would see will be produced and will stay high. So I package them all together into immune system ramps up and stays up. And I should also add inflammatory system gets another abnormality that anti-ACE2 antibodies become active as well. we found evidence of aberrant immune response distinguishing long COVID from recovered COVID. So I forgot to say that in the beginning, this was another thing that they used as the benefit of their study to say, hey, if you have a patient who's suffering from long COVID and you want to see, you want to unmask their immune system's abnormality, then give them a vaccine which will ramp up the immune system, and now you can catch the abnormal antibodies and kind of assess them to see what kind of antibodies are present. I do not think that this is a great idea to give somebody who is already suffering a vaccine only to test what is included in the ramped up immune system, unless the cost benefit analysis somehow says that, yeah, this patient who's suffering should also suffer a little more because a vaccine will be given and that would flare up their system. It doesn't make sense to me, but this is their message. This aberrancy is marked by excess IgG, as mean to spike protein, activation and ACE2 binding, along with findings consistent with a delayed or dysfunctional immunological immunoglobulin class switching. That is the IgM moving to IgG, and I'll explain that a little later. All of which is unmasked by vaccine provocation. So they're saying all these abnormalities, you can see them, observe them, measure them after giving a vaccine which will provoke the immune system and unmask these problems. So I don't know, I cannot make a generalized statement to say go do this. Anyways, these results suggest that measure of aberrant immune response may offer promise as tools for diagnosing and distinguishing long COVID from non-long COVID phenotypes, in addition to serving as a potential target for interventions. So this part is correct, that as you see that there are incorrect antibodies and there is attack on the ACE2 receptors, then there should be intervention against these things. So that part is correct. So some more details. This was a prospective study. So when the COVID started, they started enrolling people for a longer duration of observing them and studying them. This started in September 2020, and it was still ongoing, the study that is the long-term study, but they took people up to February 2022 to create this study from their samples, blood samples and their labs. This is Cedars-Sinai Medical Center. Healthy adults, there were 729, which were reference for the other two groups. COVID-19 recovered, N equals 86. These were hospital workers or employees. And then log COVID patients, 245. So these were long COVID patients who had COVID and then who had become long COVID, and they had been diagnosed as long COVID, and they already had an immune system problem in them. So then the plasma collection, the sample collections was, remember there are three groups now, healthy, those who had COVID infection and had recovered, healthy, and then those who had infection and had become long COVID. So then they got the vaccine. So within the vaccine delivery, one or two doses, within 24 hours of that, a blood sample was taken. Then there were repeat blood samples taken enough to give them data for after 8 weeks and then beyond 8 weeks. Those who did not provide further samples were excluded from the study. So these numbers that you see are the ones who had provided the data and whose data is present for processing with the researchers. So now I want to go in a little more detail about the immune system. So you may have watched my previous talks where we talk about when the innate arm of the immune system, let's say this is a dendritic cell or a macrophage and it is exposed to an antigen, then what it does is it would activate the T helper 0 cells, which will become T helper 2 cells. T helper 2 cells will then activate the B cells. I drew this B cell from my book chapter. So it still has pencil markings on it, which we'll convert later on. I just used it here. So they activate a B cell. B cells become a plasma cell. Those plasma cells start releasing antibodies. Now what happens is that after the first exposure to an antigen, B cells, who are also exposed, just like the macrophage is exposed, the B cell is also exposed to the antigen, the B cell would start making IgM, immunoglobulin M antibody, as the first response. So here, this black one. And these charts over here are not for measurement, but instead to look at the behavior of the antibody production and decline. So IgM will be produced again against S protein, for example, spike. Of course, if it is an infection, then against nuclear protein and other proteins as well. but they're measuring IgM against spike. So IgM goes up, and within a couple of weeks, it will then go down. This is the normal behavior of IgM for many kinds of antigens. Now, while IgM is going up and performing its function as an initial first responder after the innate arm has activated the adaptive arm, then a class switching occurs. So what happens is the B cells, they give rise to their progeny, they make their daughters. The daughter cells then class switch, meaning they change their antibody type from IgM to IgG, then IgE, then IgA. So here we are more concerned with the G, because G is a longer lasting antibody to provide more definitive long-term protection. So if you see here in red, after some weeks, usually between 5 to 10 days, but remember for COVID-19, IgG can actually start right away. It causes such a burden on the immune system that the class switching occurs very fast because the B cells are dividing very quickly. And so IgG production in COVID starts right away. Anyways, here, normal expected behavior of the immune system is that the class switching would occur, then IgG will be produced. That IgG would go up and stay up for many months, and then it would go down as well. Still, for many, many months, there would be IgG being produced, but it would go down after months, while the IgM goes down within 1 or 2 weeks. So that is a normal expected behavior. Now, if there is a second exposure, imagine that somebody became infected again or somebody got the vaccine, then instead of IgM, IgM can appear for a brief period of time, but mostly the IgG, the memory cells that were producing IgG, they would just become ramped up again. They would be able to respond to this re-exposure very quickly, and they'll start producing IgG again. And that would once again stay up for many months and then go down. So of course, a re-exposure or introduction of vaccination will cause at least IgGs against a spike protein, because vaccine doesn't have nuclear protein. The IgGs will go up and then stay up. That is expected. What they saw was, and again, this is not for measurement, this is just for illustration. Let's look at them one by one, black line first. What they saw was that after the vaccination, in long COVID patients, IgM went up and stayed up. In the post-infection patients, IgM went up and went down, which is the normal expected behavior. Even production of IgM sometimes is not even present with the second exposure here. But IgM went up and went down, while in the post-acute sequelae patients, long COVID patients, IgM went up and stayed up. This is an aberrant response of class switching. These cells should have class switched to IgG. Why did they still continue to make IgM? So then there are the researchers did a few postulations. They're not able to tell us, or this study did not expand into telling us what is the cause and mechanism. So they said maybe the IgM went up and stayed up in long COVID patients because the virus is persistent in them. And if the virus is persistent, then IgGN against the virus nucleocapsid should be observed as well. And they said it was observed in both cases. So maybe there is virus persistence, but they're not sure. Secondly, is it possible that there is immune cell exhaustion? That is, IgG producing cells and the memory cells are exhausted, they're not working. So IgM, the first responders, have to once again pick up the slack and do something. But they say that the IgG response in these groups was all robust. So there was no sign of immune exhaustion. So definitely this IgM going up and staying up was some kind of an aberrant class switching problem. Then if you look at the red one, there are two red lines going up and then staying up and going up and then going down. So in those patients, remember they are comparing two groups, COVID-19 infected and recovered in a healthy way, and then those who have long COVID. In the healthy individuals, as expected, the IgG went up and then IgG went down after some months or after some weeks. But in the long COVID patients, IgG went up and stayed up. So here IgM is staying up and IgG is staying up. That is an abnormal immune system response that would be accompanied with inflammation as well. So we have created a flare-up. Now, let me be fair over here. The flare-up will occur anytime you give a vaccine. There will be a temporary flare-up of the immune system. That is what's going to happen. But staying up was the problem. In the normal, healthy, post-infection individuals, it went up and then went down. Fine, all good. In sufferers of long COVID, when vaccination was given, it went up and stayed up. That is the problem. And final part of the discussion, we also assayed ACE2 binding inhibition levels. So this is the very first slide that it talked about from Dr. Bill Murphy's study, where he found anti-idiotypical antibodies present in COVID patients and more severe patients, and even those patients who were discharged. So ACE2 binding inhibition levels, so how did they actually check if there is an antibody? They saw that if the fake virus, pseudovirus, was able to bind with ACE2 or not. If the pseudovirus was not able to bind to ACE2 in their study in vitro, you know, setup, then something else was binding with ACE2, and that something else was these antibodies that were produced in the patients, in the person's plasma. So ACE2 binding inhibition levels were high, meaning antibodies were taking over and virus didn't have a chance, representing the neutralization potential of elicited receptor binding domain antibodies. So again, you could say over here that, well, isn't that good that the virus will be blocked? Yes, but at the same time, we have antibodies who are attacking our own ACE2, and now there is a balance problem between ACE1 and ACE2, and there is a pro-inflammatory system within the vascular system that has now become amplified incorrectly, because anti-inflammatory system has become occupied or blocked by anti-ACE2 antibodies that would cause vascular inflammation throughout the body. So representing the neutralization potential of elicited receptor binding domain antibodies, in the subset of study participants with ACE2 binding assay performed, we found results parallel to those for IgGS measures. Just like IgG went up, this went up as well. Why? Because IgGS will create anti-idiotypical antibodies, which will bind with ACE2. So of course, they both have to be equally up or equally down. Although no significant difference was seen between long COVID and COVID recovered participants during the immediate post-vaccination period, likely due to limited assay availability, we found ACE2 binding levels were significantly higher in individuals with long COVID compared to COVID when they got the vaccine. And it is statistically significant, and this is the post 8 weeks. So the summary of the discussion then once again is that this study shows that when vaccine is given to someone who had long COVID, then their immune system ramps up, aberrantly stays up. Aberrantly is their word I'm using. There is aberrant class switching that they said. Plus they said that the immune system antibodies, they increase and then they stay increased compared to somebody who had the infection and had recovered and now had the vaccine. So that is a discussion. Thank you very much. I would really love to see how did you interpret this, or how did you see what is the lesson from here for you as well. The lesson from the researchers that, hey, this means that give the vaccine to people with long COVID, that would provide protection. And secondly, use this vaccine to provoke the immune system profile to see the abnormalities. And then maybe this profile that they're showing is helpful for interventions. That's what they said. I have provided my point of view as well. Thank you very much, and I'll see you next time.